This episode is brought to you by Proton Mail. Folks, big tech email companies make money by scanning your emails and collecting your data so it can target you with ads. Proton Mail believes your emails belong to you. With Proton Mail, only you can read your emails. They don't track your data or show you ads, but at the same time, they provide you with all the features you need to quickly manage your workflow and organize your inbox. The only way they make money is through their paid subscription to their premium plans. Proton Mail automatically protects your privacy by blocking all spy trackers found in promotional emails, preventing senders from spying on your mail activity. In less than 10 years, Proton has grown from a small community to a privacy-first ecosystem with more than 100 million satisfied users. So if you really value your email privacy, switch to the only email service I personally use and trust, and that is Proton Mail. Go to protonmail.georgebatista.com. Again, it's protonmail.georgebatista.com, and take back your privacy.
This program is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any illness. Please speak with your doctor when starting a new health program.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another edition of the Wellness Talk Podcast. I am George Batista, your host, and as always, your wellness advocate. Of course, Wellness Talk is a show that goes over the latest in health, healing, nutrition, fitness. And this show is the last show for 2023. Really excited for the new year to come along. And let me tell you, we're going to end 2023 with a very powerful show. Okay, because we're going to be discussing the healing powers of the human body. We're going to be talking about Qigong, Tai Chi, the healing powers of breath, and anything that has to do with the body's ability to heal. And you know, you guys know how I feel about taking responsibility for your health. And we're going to be discussing that with an amazing guest today. Today we have Dr. Roger Janka with us. He's a world-renowned expert in these subjects. A little bit about Dr. Janka. He has dedicated his professional life to sharing the ancient holistic empowerment and healing traditions of China, distilled for contemporary times. As the director and chief instructor of the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi in Santa Barbara, California, Dr. Janka and his colleagues have trained over 3,000 Tai Chi and Qigong teachers and practice leaders internationally. He is the author of the book, The Healer Within, Using Traditional Chinese Techniques to Release Your Body's Own Medicine, as well as the author of The Healing Promise of Qi, Creating Extraordinary Wellness Through Qigong and Tai Chi. With more than 35 years of clinical practice as a physician of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, Dr. Janka has emerged as a key spokesperson for and the master teacher of Tai Chi, Qigong, and mind-body practice. And it is my honor to have him on this program. Dr. Janka, thank you so much for joining us today.
Wow, George, what a pleasure. Excited about it. And I like this idea of wrapping up 2023 as we go into the winter solstice, that season of like personal transformation and the infusion of spiritual light and the lengthening of the days and getting excited about the spring and the summer and making a plan, like having a holistic plan.
Yes, yes.
For our absolutely coming year. Very excited to be with you, sir, and really appreciating all you do.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, this is going to be a great discussion. And, you know, going into the new year, you know, a lot of people make resolutions and that type of thing. You know, obviously not only we as human beings, but the planet right now can really use healing, you know, in many, many different ways. And I want to have that healing together with you and everyone in this space who can really just, you know, affect everyone else. And, you know, that butterfly effect, if we can send that message out and really have a healing, that's really what hopefully we can do. So I'm excited about this. I want to talk a little bit about your beginnings, because I know that you started out actually pre-med, if I'm correct, and you kind of were going into that, the conventional model of medicine. And for those who are not familiar with you, talk a little bit about that and then kind of how you made that transition into Chinese medicine and kind of those healing practices.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, George. I had the weighty experience of having my father pass away when I was I wasn't even 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And previous to that, I'm from a place called Cincinnati, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so when people would say to me, you know, when I was a little kid, what are you going to do when you grow up? I would say, well, I'm going to be on the baseball team of the Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
And following the passing of my dad, and I didn't really notice this until later, but I started answering that same question with, I'm going to be a doctor. And so what was interesting about that is that when I got to pre-medical school, and I was from a family that the tradition was that you would do a mentorship with someone who does something like you are inclined to do. And so I started looking for a mentor. And so I was asking around, and the question was basically, who in this medical school is the sort of the guru of disease prevention? And I got this kind of, I'm paraphrasing because many people said the same thing in different ways, was something like, well, we don't know much about that because we're doctors. Mm-hmm. And doctors don't do that. If you want to learn how to do that, you have to study in home economics or something like that. You know, study the things that your mom would be interested in, because doctors only diagnose and treat disease. That's our expertise. And I found that so depressing that I quit. Wow. And studied world literature. And the one of the first books that we read in world literature was this little text from China from 2,500 years ago. You may be familiar with it. It's called the Tao Te Ching.
Yes. Yes.
Tao Te Ching being a small text with some short, shall we say, sutras or phrase, you know, poems or whatever you want to call that regarding the nature of our lives. And so I was the kind of weird character who would go to the library, but instead of staying in the part where all the main books are, I would go into this place that's called the stacks. And stacks are behind closed doors, and it's like miles and miles of shelves. And, you know, you'd have to pull a string and a light would come on. And, you know, you could see the books like from here to there.
Right.
And I found a manuscript that was a handwritten translation of the Tao Te Ching into English from a what appeared to be a Jesuit missionary. And the version of the Tao Te Ching that we were reading in the class was very scholarly. Mm-hmm. And the version that I found hidden away was very it was obvious that the person who did the translation was intent upon making the concepts from the Chinese language into language that a person, like an average person in America or in English-speaking country, could read.
Right.
And I actually shouted, like out loud. I was so struck by this. I shouted out loud, I'm going to be a doctor of this. And so, you know, then I got into Chinese medicine. And it's a very long story and it's all really interesting, but that's the basics.
Wow. Interesting. It's you're right, because when you look at those texts, the Tao Te Ching and other texts that are similar to that, you can get lost a little bit, you know, if you're, you know, you really have to kind of look at that information. I used to, you know, even with me when I was, when I first got into yoga, the Yoga Sutras and, you know, trying to decipher them and saying, okay, and how do they apply to your life and these types of things. So, but, I always say you know, when you're following this path and, you know, especially the healing path, you do have to be a little bit weird. You know, because there are a lot of people that are going to look at you weird. You know, did you when you left medicine and you went down that path, did you have people saying, what are you doing? Why would you do that? You know, did you get that a lot of that?
My poor mom, you know.
Yeah, I was exactly right.
So my mom says, my son's studying medicine. Then my mom says, my son just dropped out of medical school and he's studying the poetry of the philosophers, and you know, it just doesn't sound anywhere near as reasonable in terms of like generating a livelihood and you know all that stuff. So yeah, it was a pretty big deal, and I apologized to my mom for years, and she actually at one point said, would you kindly stop apologizing? And you know, and I did, and it was good because we had a kind of a healing. I'm from Cincinnati. In 1967, it was called the Summer of Love,
right?
And there was a song that came onto the radio when myself and my best friend, you know, every Saturday morning, they would give the statistics on the top 10 and all that stuff. And one of the top songs, it might have been the top song that week, was If You're Going to San Francisco, Wear Flowers in Your Hair. And so my buddy and I, we looked at each other and said, let's do it. And so we actually literally hitchhiked from Cincinnati to San Francisco. Our moms were, you know, at the front door waving by and saying, I'm never going to see the sun that I now know again. And it was so true. When I got back after being in San Francisco and Berkeley in 1967 for a period, it was my third year in college. Mm-hmm. And so when I got back for my, when I get back for the third year of college, I would definitely not the same person who left home. And it was great for me. I mean, I love where I am now. I get to do, I'm sure that we share this, by the way, George, is, you know, what is the entrepreneurial dream? And the entrepreneurial dream is to do something that's associated with your life purpose.
Yeah.
And generate livelihood.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. Blessed, yeah, to have had the experience of actually doing that. And I'm just like, you know, we are always thankful on Thanksgiving, but I'm thankful every day for just the trajectory of my life and where I've ended up, and this incredibly rich body of information that is sort of like my gig.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we probably have shared appreciation in that regard.
Definitely. Definitely. Absolutely. It's, yeah, when you're doing your passion and you feel it and you wake up every morning and you're like, you know, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, I'm excited. And I'm, you know, even, you know, I'm doing this show and, you know, a lot of people would get burnt out doing this type of stuff. I get excited. Like, what's the next topic? Who am I going to talk to next? Who's my next guest? You know, what it fuels me. And it, you know, the only other thing I would say that fueled me, not only health fuels me in general, just health and healing. The only other thing that fueled me was music. Was, again, as a musician as well, getting up and practicing. I still practice to this day. You know, it's just, it gives you a feeling. Yeah. And you kind of leave yourself. You leave your body when you do that also, when you're, especially when you're so focused on it. And you know how that is. One of the concepts you talked about, I've heard you talk about in the past, is the concept of self-determinism. And you address it in a very powerful way. And this is something that I've kind of addressed on this show as well. And I love the way you address it. So talk a little bit about self-determinism in terms of healing and what the concept for the average person is.
Wow, George, what a beautiful question. I've done a lot of podcasts and nobody has asked me that question. And I have to kind of like, you know, push it in. So here it comes from George. I love that. So self-determinism, number one, you know, what do we think about who we are? If we're from any kind of, family-based, spiritual tradition, we say in our own way, whether it's doesn't matter what the tradition is, whether it's an Asian tradition or a European tradition, we always say that a person is an expression of the love of the of, you know, whatever we think we would call God.
Right.
And so right away, we're like a manifestation of a beautiful macrocosmic ideal, meaning a universal ideal that is then compressed and composed through the marvel of however the world works,
right,
to be a person.
Yeah.
So then the question is always right there. And that is like, who is in charge? And the religions would say you have a direct relationship with God, and so it is your direct relationship with God that is your highest guidance. And so that's right away that is compromised or tested by the fact that as an infant, you don't even know what to make a decision about.
Right.
And so one of the things that's really interesting is that it's pretty classic for children, once they get into their 13, 14, 15 era, to begin to argue against the parents, you know, pretty much like no matter what.
I know.
And then, you know, why? Because we did that and then we had children who did that. So then we go to this beautiful document that basically created the place where we live for all of its shortcomings in the beginning, which is to basically eliminate an entire culture and take over their land. So we'll leave that aside.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say, I don't want to use the word blame or guilt, but I have a very deep awareness of how ridiculous and inappropriate that was.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are. So we'll just, I study with these people. I bow to them. I've gone to reservations. I've really done as much as a citizen of the United States can do to honor the First Nation people. But then going on to the Declaration of Independence, which was labored over by a group of individuals, males, but, you know, many of them were married, and I'm sure that they were getting advice from their wives and so forth, to create the Declaration of Independence, which basically says right at the beginning that we have these inalienable personal rights.
Right.
And so that primary personal right, which has to do with being able to say what you want to say, which ends up in the Constitution, and the invitation to pursue happiness. Well, you know, how can you possibly be happy if you're in pain or not feeling well? And
right.
So the implication is that the framers of the original ideal of the democratic ideal on which the Declaration of Independence is based, is this whole idea of know thyself and determine thy next step through your orientation. Right. And so how do I get oriented? Well, I read. I do a lot of reading, and I put myself in relationships with people like you who are thoughtful, and then we debate things or we reach agreement on things, and we know from that process that not everybody has the same biases, but that everybody does shares their favorite bias in a way that allows for the fact that somebody else is listening and that I will be listening when they're sharing their bias.
Right.
And then I'm not going to get into the business of, if they've got a question or if we want to talk about a topic and even sort of do some debating on it and go to the research literature and all that stuff. I love that stuff. So I'm fine with that. So then the final kind of thing to say about this is that we are invited by the fact that we take on this body and this personality and then allow the personality to be, to some extent, crafted by the people that we live with, both through the good things that they do and the traumas that they instill upon us.
Yeah.
And then we free ourselves. And in that freedom is our political freedom, our speech freedom, our health freedom, and our invitation to be a energized, vital contributor to a diverse and robust society.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then, one last thing is that then we look at the industrial complexes. Mm. So does the medical industrial complex foster self-determinism? No.
No.
Does the military industrial complex foster peace? No.
No.
And so, when a person who is awake enough to see what's going on, the contrast between being invited to be a self-determining individual by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and then having that invitation be neutralized and canceled by the industrial complexes, which include the educational industrial complex, the agricultural industrial complex, and everything else that's been corporatized and sort of homogenized. And sort of assumes that people are just going to go along.
Yeah.
And I'm not going along. I don't think you're going along. And my kids are more going along than I am. And I'm kind of sad about it, but it's out of my hands at this point.
Yeah. It's really the issue because When you're young, just like exactly what you said, when you're young, right? Children are curious about everything. They're curious. My daughter was curious. She tried to get into everything. She wanted to know everything. She asked questions about everything. And that's a natural curiosity, right? And then as we get into those later years, this is where schooling comes in. And what do? They kind of want to pigeonhole you into, okay, now you have to follow. Now you have to memorize. Yep. Now you have to get into society. Now you have to do this and be a good student and eventually a good worker and that type of thing. And that's kind of the flow, the way it goes. And what I did, knowing that, because I follow, I was not as curious as I wanted to be when I was younger, but I told my daughter because now, I kind of got awakened to in more of the health space, but in general, just with life as well. And I said to myself, if I ever had kids, I want to make sure that my child is already awake as possible. And I'm going to teach her as much as possible to be as self-determined as possible. Yeah. And, obviously you have parental guidelines and all these types of things. You got to make sure that the kid doesn't run into traffic and all that. That's of course. But at the same time, I want my kid to understand that I want her to question things. I want her to, does it make sense? does this, you know, I wanted to have that. And now at 17 years old, she does that. And she kind of understands where I'm coming from with these types of stuff. And then this is where you know, talking about taking responsibility, right? And if we look at it from a health, determining our own health, okay, health freedom. This is what we want, right? And this is what you know, folks like you and folks like me try to teach people. Listen, you know, be curious, not only curious about yourself, but curious about your health and have that childlike curiosity that you used to have when you were a child and ask questions. And if it doesn't make sense, find out, get educated. And this is what I try to do on this show. And I think this is what we need more of, you know, and I, you know, obviously the last few years we've dealt with a lot of stuff, but I think there is an awakening happening.
An awakening happening in a lot of people because of the last few.
Correct. Years. Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is what gives me hope on the health side of things, because I think we're going to start to see people question stuff and maybe because, and I've always said on the show that we've been conditioned as a society in general for the last 100 years to think that big pharma and all that is health. That's really what is health. That's what our conditioning has been. And, you know, I'm here to say, no, you have more control. You have more control over your health than you can even possibly imagine.
Yes.
You know, and this is the message, right? And this is, to me, as even in the health space, self-determinism, being able to use your power of critical thinking to say, that doesn't make sense. I know what's good for me and my body, and this is what I want to do, you know?
Well, then now check out a couple of cool little things that I can say very briefly about this. First one is, I was, I'm stunned and shall we say, called to attention by this experience that I had as a kid. So playing football with a helmet with a face guard, the chin strap busted off, and it broke my tooth in half.
Wow.
And so we went to the dentist, and the dentist said, oh, you know, like, this is, we shouldn't try to do anything about this now. Let's just see what happens. And I didn't know what that meant, you know, because my idea would be like, just put my tooth back on, right?
Right.
and so then my grandmother said, you know, God will grow that tooth. God is going to put that tooth right back in its right place. And within about 6 or 7 months, that tooth on its own grew back out to the proper length to be even with my other front tooth. And so talk about a call to attention. I mean, at the time I thought, well, grandma said, you know, and then it did. And she didn't say, like, I'm going to ask God to grow that tooth. She just said, God is going to do it.
That's it.
And so I thought that was really cool. Okay, second one is a little more mundane, but you're aware, of course, over the years about different states going through legislative processes to possibly make vitamins illegal as food and to make them into, you know, prescriptive pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. You know, there's your medical industrial or your pharmaceutical industrial complex. So I went to a hearing. I was working at a clinic in Columbus, Ohio in 1978 or something like that. And so I went as a representative of this particular clinic. I was trained as a doctor of Chinese medicine, acupuncture, herbal medicine, et cetera, at the time. And all the people at the kind of a very holistic clinic, you know, all the way back in the 70s. And I was elected to go and hang out at this hearing and then make a statement. Well, the two people ahead of me was a kind of a hipster type character who said, you know, I grow my vegetables, but mostly the vegetables that we get at the store, you know, don't have enough vitamins, and vitamins are not drugs. They're, you know, so it was a very left-leaning, shall we say, sort of character. Well, the next person who was in front of me walked up to the podium and announced that he was a member of something called the John Birch Society. Well, the John Birch Society, it turns out, is like a very, very hard right-leaning organization, super conservative. You know, we would think of it as the first person was kind of a little bit like a Democrat, but a far left Democrat. And the second person was a far right Republican. And both of those individuals basically used the same language about personal freedom and the ability to be able to take care of their own family. And so why I'm saying this is that there's a lot of people who are struggling right now around the whole concept of, well, who's who and who's the bad guys, who's the good guys, and who will I vote for, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what we know is that no matter whether you lean to the progressive side or if you lean to the conservative side, that health is a transpartisan issue.
Yes.
And it invites us, although right now people are very separated.
Sure.
And so, like, you know, if you're into psychedelics, you're probably a Democrat. And if you're into, like, you know, having a farm in Arkansas and you know, raising pigs, should probably be a Republican. So health has become politicized, but people are conflicted because of the fact that you can't just say that this or that part of health is really a political issue. And so a Republican might get say, well, but I want to grow a garden too. You know, or a Democrat might say, well, you know, I want to raise fish and, and on my whatever they call those, what is that, where you you have everything is in one place and it's kind of farming anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So the point is that health freedom at the base of the rights that we have is a transpartisan issue. And there's a huge population of people who are realizing that. And I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very excited. And again, I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful for what's coming, you know, down the pike. So we'll see. I want to talk to you a little bit about, I want to get into a little bit about the Qigong and the power of Qigong. And for folks that don't know, I mean, there's a lot of folks that don't know about it, right? They may see it, or they may see a video on it and that type of thing. And so talk to me a little bit about how you got involved in Qigong and then the power of it to be such a healing modality for people. And, you know, and you can bring in the breath in that as well.
Sure. So let's go to cultures. Mm-hmm. And if we go back in history a ways, what we find is that humans, let's go back, you know, 5,000 years, there's a robust human activity in China. There's robust human activity in India. There's robust human activity in the Middle Eastern, you know, the Tigris and Euphrates and all of that, Africa, Europe, North and South America are robust and very active with the original people of those nations. And so if we ask the question, what is the medical system that was developed by all of them? We would say that it would be something like shamanic medicine, meaning the medicine previous to the ultra civilization of the region. So before China worked its way through all of the fiddle faddle that had to happen to create a large China. And you know, and even until very recently, Europe was just a bunch of different countries. And they all had their shamanic roots that go back to the Vikings and the Celts and so forth, and the Druids and all that, North and South America, all of that. They all have a medical system based on the same idea. And that is that the body is in a relationship with nature. It's an expression of nature. It's in a relationship with nature. And, of course, one of the things that nature is doing all the time is giving us a show. It's a solar show, right, and it's a lunar show. And the solar show basically gets divided into seasons. I'm going to answer your question, but I think it's really important for people to understand that these prehistoric, if we say history starts around 5,000, then these people who are 10,000, 30,000, 100,000 years ago, they were all having the same experience of, wow, these days are really getting long. And then later, wow, these days are really getting short. And then there's a place in between the longing and the shorting that we call the equinox. And these days are kind of the same length. The night and the day is around the same length. And so we ascribe seasons to those four conditions, short days, long days, and then two rounds of even days coming in and going out of the winter or the summer. So four seasons.
Right.
Then you have full moons. Well, there's typically 12 full moons in a year. If you divide things up in a certain way and use a certain kind of esoteric counting, you can get that there were 13 full moons in a year, and often there are. But that's not where we're going right now. Right now, what we're looking at is, well, what is the pattern of the moon? Because we would say to ourselves, when should we do this? And then instead of looking at our iPhone and looking at something called December and January, we would look at the moon and say, okay, this looks like we're probably in the new moon right before the beginning of spring. And so that's good, because what's going to happen is things are going to start thawing out. We're going to see green stuff coming out on the trees and so forth. And we're going to celebrate that. And we'll celebrate that somewhere right around the time when the day and the night are the same length, because that's what happens on the spring equinox. And so we could say, you know, I'll meet you at the hot spring at the foot of the largest mountain that we both can see on the new moon that is as close to the equinox as possible. So it gave us a calendar for planning things. So the fact that the human system is in the same environment as, let's say, the tree that loses its leaves, then gets flowers on it, then makes fruit, and then we can eat that fruit. Well, we happen to be in the same region. We're experiencing the same full moons and new moons. We're experiencing the same long days and short days. So in the mind of original people, we are nature and an expression of nature. Whether you want to spiritualize that and put it into something called God, or if you want to just say that God is nature. And so then the whole idea would naturally be that if we live in accord with nature, we're probably going to be fit. And of course, you know, 10,000 years ago, everybody was exercising. Yeah. Hunters were exercising, warriors were exercising, women were carrying, you know, to any women who are sensitive to this, please know that I am a feminist. I don't say that women carry water because of the fact that men should have been doing that. You know, there's nothing about that here. And let's just stay with it, that everybody was exercising. And everybody was celebrating these seasons. And everybody was dancing and moving around in celebration and rituals to celebrate births, deaths, graduations, coming of age, and marriage, and all that stuff. And so there's a lot of, we could say there's a lot of partying going on.
Right.
And these parties are, you know, where you stay up, not everyone, but some of these parties, you stay up all night and you dance yourself into a frenzy and you have downloads of intuition to guide you for the next steps that you're going to make. And then because you've lived in this environment for some time, you know what that plant is and what that plant is and what that plant is because your grandmother told you. And so this whole idea of the foundation of the medical system is that it's not medical at all. It's the health. It's a health care system where people care for their health. And of course, you've noticed that we don't spell health care with the space between the two words anymore. We only put the word health and care together, which is really not a healthcare system at all. It's a financing system for the medical industrial complex. So now, to your question, is like what happens when a culture has been around? The human gene is 3 million years, and the ability for humans to build a fire is over 1 million years, and the people who were previous to humans, which we call like monkeys, apes, chimpanzees, and so forth, did they or did they not communicate with each other? Well, of course they communicated with each other. So since the beginning of the human gene, we have been communicating with each other. At what point did we develop some esoteric language? And what I mean by esoteric is formulated language with nuance. So that a person could say, I have a headache, and I know that it's not because of the fact that I worked hard yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because I have headaches on a regular basis.
Right.
So what should I do? And then the doctor doesn't say, well, I'm going to write this down. You go and get this drug from your pharmacy. What the doctor says is, you know, let's track this down. Let's see what's going on. Let me feel your pulse. Let me look at your tongue. Let me look into your eyes. Let me check your, you know, your, shall we say, dexterity and coordination. And that's one of the great things about that we hear early in our study of Chinese medicine is that the doctor diagnoses the person without asking them what's bothering. And so when we go to I, as a doctor, did this for 35 years.
Right.
I would greet the person in the waiting room, invite them into my office, have them walk in front of me so that I could see their energy and their gait and the level of pep or absence of pep that they have. When they get into my office, I don't ask them. I don't say, like, well, why are you here and what's your problem? I say, you know, what's your favorite thing?
Right.
You know, what are you excited about these days? And then I get to hear the sound of their voice. and the pace of their words and the extent of their vocabulary. And I can even lean forward while they're talking and watch when their mouth opens to formulate certain words to see their tongue, because Chinese doctors look at people's tongues and the color of their skin and the sound of their voice. You know, is it like a singing sound, or is it more like a sighing sound? And there's just all of this incredible information that can be gathered about a person's, shall we say, constitutional makeup. And so then what does the doctor do? Probably reminds the person about some basic things like getting enough rest and hydrating. I'm drinking Golden Monkey, tea from China. And, how are you getting along with your family? And is there somebody that needs to say something to somebody to be able to get to the point where you feel comfortable about being in the family and having things work out? So then all of those societies have circles, and people sit in circles. They are invited in the presence of other people to share their feelings. And so they have a kind of a natural tendency to a kind of homespun, grandma-driven psychotherapy, which can bring a person who's getting isolated and frustrated back into a connection with some, dialogues that help with all of that stuff. Well, okay, so what about what else? Well, you can do well if you could quiet down. So now we're talking about meditation. And then you say, oh, I've been so worried. My kids, the other tribes are looking like they're going to, be angry at our tribe or whatever. I'm worried about what's going to happen. And then the doctor says, well, yeah, that's true. But, in the presence of that, we know that when that bad thing isn't happening, that it's a good time to prepare for that bad thing, not by worrying, but by cultivating the capacity to keep yourself steady and vital and resilient and capable and ready for anything.
Yeah.
And so then the person says, I don't have time. We say that all the time these days. Apparently we do have less time than ancient people. There's lots of information about that. And we were supposed to have more time. Automation was supposed to make our lives into leisure, which could be happening, by the way, with AI.
Right.
Fast.
Mm-hmm.
But the point there is that the doctor or the shaman or the high priestess or the medicine woman or whoever it was that this person was consulting to be able to maximize their well-being would say, well, okay, so the easiest thing is right before you go to do a bunch of breath practices and rub your body. Just tap on points and rub your body. So that is a time that every human being isn't doing something else. They're just getting ready to fall asleep. And it's the same with the next day in the morning. Who jumps right up? And, so we usually wake up and then we kind of something, and then we get up. And usually the something is worrying about, things that we should have done and
that's right.
Things that we have to do. And so then they say, could I just take a little time to do some breath practice and some tapping on these energy points before I get up? And so then the person says, of course I could do that. So there's no drugs, there's no surgical procedures. There's just this beautiful sharing about the things that a person might have forgotten to do. Yeah. And then the final point is that Qigong puts breath practice and body posture and movement and mind clearing, call that meditation, and self-applied massage into a little package called Qigong. So Qigong is basically a part of this health maximization process that was invented by the Chinese, but then the people in India, they invented it, they call it yoga, and different people in different cultures call it, you know, in the Native American and so forth, they have the medicine wheel and the peace pipe and, you know, all that stuff.
Right. Right.
Declarations and communicating with God. And so what I'm saying is that there's an archetypal model of medicine, and it's not based on disease. It's based on mobilizing internal functional resources. And if we ask the question, what is qi? Then the best answer is that qi describes the optimal presence of functional capacity in any system. So if we talk about the solar system, harmonious qi in the solar system is that the Earth continues to go around the sun in the pattern that it has been, you know, plus or minus a little something for a really long time. And so what about the qi of a tree? Well, you know, the qi of a tree is that it raises nutrients from the ground and expresses it in the leaves. The leaves gather the sun, and then, you know, they put out oxygen, by the way. They take in carbon dioxide and they put out oxygen. And so that is the qi of a tree. Well, what is the qi of my brain? Well, the qi of my brain is the level of function of my brain. Mm-hmm. So if my brain is functioning pretty well, then I would say that my brain qi is robust, right, and harmonious. And so qigong means to work with and develop the skill to work with the qi, which is really a way of saying, we could use the language in the Western world of saying the capacity, developing the capacity, developing the skill to work with the optimization of functional capacity. And so Qigong is any kind of functional optimization process.
Wow. That is some explanation for it, but it's so true. It is absolutely true.
Is that gorgeous or what?
It's amazing. I've never heard it described in that way. That's incredible. And you're right. You know, you're so right. And I've often said, when you look at nature and you look at, like you talked about the solar system, right? Everything is moving as it's supposed to be. Everything is coordinated, just like your body is coordinated, just like we talked about before, right? You didn't have to ask to grow the tooth. The tooth just grew on its own, right? The solar system has cycles. The earth has cycles. The body has cycles. Everything is cyclical. Everything goes through its, you know, and it all works in perfect harmony. You know, it's design. And this is, again, what I always say, what we have to get back to understanding. And I think you had a beautiful way of putting that, because it's not, you know, people look at Qigong and Tai Chi and these types of things, and they just see the movement. They just, because we're so focused on the external, the exercise, the aesthetics, yeah, you know, yeah. I need to go to the gym. I need to lift weights. I need to do this. And they'll look at something like Qigong and they're like, well, that's too slow for me. Oh, that's, you know, I can't be still. I can't breathe. I can't do, you know, I need to be fast. And that's our society is kind of like that. And those folks are kind of missing the point of the whole thing, because, you know, we really, at the end of the day, that what you know, that understanding and that what you've talked about in working with and the chi and that type of thing, really at the end of the day, that's health, in my opinion. That is health.
Yeah.
You know, at its fundamental level.
Well, we say the most profound medicine is produced within the human body for free.
Yes. Yes. It's own, you know, has a pharmacy. I like to say the human body grew itself all by itself and knows how to heal itself. Right?
Amen.
Absolutely. And another thing that that you talk about a lot, and what I found in my life doing years of yoga, was the power of the breath. And I've talked about yoga because I got like addicted to it at some point, because not necessarily doing the practice itself, it was after the practice. I got addicted to the feeling that I had.
Yep.
And it's really, I mean, it was like a drug almost for me, because I would do the practice and I would sit there going, wow, the amazing feel. But what I didn't realize was that all that breath that I was taking in and that practice, that's the medicine. That feeling that you have, that's the medicine.
That's it.
That's the medicine. And it took me a while to understand that concept. Talk a little bit about your concept of breath and why it's so powerful.
Yeah. And on our way in, let's just say or reiterate or confirm that turning on the medicine within, which is the most profound medicine, has no cost.
Yeah.
And when you do it, you can't feel it. So you've got confirmation. It's not like, oh, some yogi, something, something, or, you know, somebody who is smoking it,
right,
something, something. It's like, I am feeling something. And what I've heard is that basically this is my functional capacity operating at a more optimal level. And why wouldn't I do it? I can do that actually lying in bed, or I can do that while I'm sitting on the toilet.
Yep.
And I can do it while I'm texting, and I can do it while I'm driving. And I probably don't do it very well when I'm tense.
Yeah.
So then when I'm tense, if I know myself well enough, when I'm tense, I can actually recognize that I'm tense. And then I can ask myself the question, do I want to do something to neutralize that state of stress and tension? And then I can actually listen to myself say, no, I'm too tense to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, know thyself, we said before.
Yep.
Now I know that I'm kind of dumb sometimes,
right,
when I talk myself out of managing my personological, my characterological, my ego, whatever you want to call it, self. So probably we could say, okay, so now I need to relax. What am I going to do? Well, I could just look at the idea of relaxing. Maybe that'll relax me. Well, maybe it will or maybe it won't, but you can relax yourself. You can make a change in your blood pressure.
Yep.
And the level of the presence of neurotransmitters in the human system that are reflective of the parasympathetic recovery, the rest and recovery aspect, as opposed to the hysterical get her done aspect, the adrenaline aspect or the choline aspect. And you can shift into choline-based neurotransmitters basically being dumped into the system from the brain and the gut and all the parts that are involved in these things in less than a minute. In less than a minute. In one of my books, which is called The Healer Within, we have what's called the 10-second method. And then you have the 1 minute method. And then you have the 10 minute method. It takes one time for most people, one time of taking one deep breath and then letting it out very slowly, just once, to realize, wow, I'm already feeling a little different. Maybe I could do that again. So now it's another 10 seconds. And pretty soon you've only spent like one half of 1 minute, and you can start to feel the medicine within.
Yes.
And you said earlier, and I really want to come back to it because I think it's one of the most important things that anybody who's on a quest for personal empowerment to really reflect on seriously. And that is, when we put our children in school and they are now corralled into doing what everybody else is doing when everybody else is doing it. And so that's early training, when children are very young, to kind of get in line. So then here comes George, and he says, you are a self-determining sovereign individual, and you're allowed to do this. And then the person says, but everybody else isn't doing that, and so I can't do that either. And so the educational industrial complex, my kids went to Waldorf schools, which are associated with Rudolf Steiner. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't declare that they are different citizens than they would have been if they went to a public school, but the system of education that I wanted my kids to be in was a self-determining educational system, and self-determining educational systems are out there.
Right.
So anyway, I really want to everybody that's listening, that George said, you know, this thing that really makes it clear, like, when we think, oh, I can't do that, what are we saying? Oh, I don't have time for breath practice, or I'm not, I think it's kind of dangerous. This doesn't feel right. People, nobody does this whole thing of being self-aware. People aren't self-aware. I can't be self-aware. I'm not allowed to be self-aware. I've never been self-aware. I was taught not to be self-aware. And so now we have to live with the consequences of that. And when we look at our society, don't even look at the healthcare system, which is a hysterical mess. Just look at how people are perceiving each other.
Yeah.
It's tragic.
Yeah.
And okay, so but the question was breath practice. So how do we? The big secret is to transform an average citizen into a self-determining individual who understands what they have come to understand and feels invited to have that understanding. So that's what we're looking for. So now how do we take this educated person who has been sort of, brainwashed?
Mm.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know, fortunately, I was able to find my way to Berkeley in 1967, have a few different experiences that sort of uneducated me. And it was one of the most important things that ever happened in my life. But what can we do? Well, we can teach people to do breath practice. And I'll just say two things about breath practice that almost nobody knows. One. And there's a lot of things about breath practice that everybody knows. Like, if you slow your breath down, it has a positive effect on your parasympathetic nervous system and so forth. But here's two things that people don't know. One is that carbon dioxide, which is the waste product of the work of the cell. So in other words, you put glucose and oxygen into the body in the presence of a lot of enzymes and other features, and then you get what's called work from the cell. And when the cell has basically digested the nutrients, it expels waste.
Right.
And so the waste products of the work of the cell, metabolism essentially, are carbon dioxide and water, which is pretty cool. Pure H2O is a byproduct of cellular work.
Right.
So when you work your cells through exercise or thinking or anything like that, you're actually expelling pure H2O into your system everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Right.
But that wasn't the point. The point is that we perceive CO2 as a waste product. But if you hold your breath in, your body's metabolizing, and then what happens is that the availability of oxygen is shrinking, and the presence of CO2 is raising. And so you get an inordinate or unusual amount of CO2 in the system. So we would say, oh my gosh, that's bad. That's the accumulation of a waste product.
Right.
But there's this thing called hormesis. Hormesis is basically, very simply described, as creating stresses that actually make us stronger. So training, you know, when we lift weights or run distances, these are all stresses on the system that help us to become more resilient, stronger. Taking cold showers is a kind of hormesis. You know, doing those ice bath plunges, that's a kind of hormesis. Using your left hand to brush your teeth if you're right-handed. And I put my mouse on the left side of my computer instead of on the right side of my computer because I just want to do whatever I can to stress myself into a higher level of function.
Sure.
And so the presence of an accumulation of CO2 in the system causes a cascade of internal mechanisms to come online. And it has to do with survival.
Right.
And so if you expose yourself to an increased amount of CO2 on a regular basis as a kind of training, what happens is that you end up with a wider, what is called a wider homeostatic capacity. And as you know, homeostasis is when the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, are operating in harmony and they're kind of ping-ponging and they're doing what they do and they're both very resilient and very capable of doing what they need to do. And so if you stress them, then they can get back to homeostasis more quickly, and which means that you can tolerate greater stresses and more unusual kind of edgy circumstances.
Right.
So holding our breath in for a length of time, and it doesn't even have to be a big deal. We can just hold our breath for 30 seconds, or I like to see how long I can hold my breath, you know, getting close to 2 minutes. When you were a kid, didn't you go to the pool and then have races with people to see how far, who could hold their breath longest and all that stuff? So that's the first one, is that breath holding in causes us to build up CO2 to a high enough level that it triggers internal responsiveness that has to do with survival.
Right.
And therefore we come out stronger. The second one that most people don't know about is nitric oxide.
Mm.
It turns out that if you go to YouTube and put in, you know, health benefits of nitric oxide, and wow, here it comes. It's just like amazing how important nitric oxide is to the human system. But where do we get it? And one of the easiest ways to get nitric oxide is to simply just breathe in through your nose.
That's right.
And so here's the thing that people will really find interesting, and I think most people don't know too much about it, and that is that if you hold your breath out, what's happening is that the nasal passages have a natural function of introducing nitric oxide, a gas, into the nasal passages. And so when you breathe in through your nose, you're taking in nitric oxide on a regular basis. And nitric oxide is very important for the flexibility of the vascular system.
Right,
so in other words,
exactly.
An inflexible vascular system could have a high level of pressure and cause a problem. And a flexible vascular system, through a lot of different features, including nitric oxide, but also including healthy vascular tissue, which has to do with collagen and endothelial cells and all that stuff, the combination of flexibility through tissue flexibility and the introduction of nitric oxide, which creates another, shall we say, input on vascular flexibility, gives you, it's even a kind of a cure for heart disease. Because if people are at risk for heart disease, they have high blood pressure, and they learn how to manage their diet so that they're not damaging their blood vessels quite as much. They're using collagen through their foods and through supplementation if they want to. And then they're raising the magnitude of infusion of nitric oxide by holding the breath out. Because when you hold your breath out, nitric oxide is being produced and circulated into the nasal passages. And then when you breathe in, you get this massive superdose of nitric oxide.
That's right.
And there's so much more that we can say. Like, for instance, there's the whole question of, should I breathe out through the nose or should I breathe out through the mouth? And different teachers will tell you different things. But there's two things that we know about this whole process. One is that if you breathe in and out through the nose slowly, it releases the medicine, the recovery medicine, in the form of choline-based neurotransmitters into the system.
Right.
That's very powerful.
Yeah.
But if you breathe out through the mouth and then in through the nose, what's happening is that while you're breathing out from the mouth, the nitric oxide is building up in the nasal cavity, so that when you do breathe in through the nose, you get a bigger dose than you would if you were breathing out through your nose. This beautiful logic for how and, you know, et cetera, to breathe in and out through the different parts of our body. And science is just unpacking all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Wow. That is what I call a masterclass in breath, but it's so true. It's so true. And, you know, again, you're absolutely right. We have to do that as a society. We have to breathe more. We're running around, we're doing all these things where our breaths are so shallow.
Yeah,
and we're just not paying attention, and it breeds awareness when you do it. When you just awareness of yourself, awareness of your surroundings, awareness of even just how you feel. You know, I call it checking in. You know,
yes.
Checking in on yourself. You know, and it's such a great thing that we definitely need to do. And again, at the end of the day, for healing, we all need to do that for healing, all around the planet. I wanted to mention really quick that you, I know you have some amazing trainings that you do on your website, right? So you actually teach folks and you train people. You've trained so many people around the world at this point, right?
Yep. Yep. Let's just start with teaching people to practice Qigong and Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that since 1977 or so. And somewhere around when I was becoming frustrated, I didn't tell this part of the story, but I'll say it now, is that being a doctor of Chinese medicine was amazing and I loved it. And Chinese medicine is very, very powerful for all the reasons that we've just described, because it's not based on taking something from outside and putting it in or taking something like an organ from within and just ripping it out. Right. It's all about how to be able to cultivate the functional capacity within the system using herbal medicine, massage, acupuncture, and then Qigong and all that. So this whole question of, what does the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi deliver? And so first we deliver to the citizens. I teach classes, and all the people that we've trained, which is the second level. So now we're training people to be teachers, to take Qigong and Tai Chi to the citizens. So we have, work with the people. Then we've got work with training people to be teachers. And then above that, we have training people that we've made into teachers to be trainers. So our whole concept is to go exponential to a massive scale. So we've trained 3,000 people as what we call teachers or practice leaders. And there's a difference between the two. And, people can I noticed that you put up the web address. So if people will check into that, they'll see, where are there going to be classes for citizens who want to learn how to practice, and then where are there going to be trainings for individuals who want to become a teacher of Qigong and Tai Chi.
Right.
And then from the cream of the crop, we actually leverage graduates who are articulate and team players and have an interesting capacity for being a trainer, so that they can lead trainings of teachers who take it to the citizens of their communities. So it's pretty thorough and it's very exciting. And then I'm also associated with a nonprofit, which is called the Healer Within Foundation. And the Healer Within Foundation actually takes those trainers and then directs the training to agencies and institutions that are facing disenfranchised communities or under-resourced communities, drugs, alcohol, family violence, you name it, the first responders, nurses, hospital wellness programs, YMCA, Veterans Administration. We're excited and we're, with humility, we have like a massive amount of pride in the fact that these ideas that we've been talking about can then be compressed into Qigong. Because once a person has had the feeling of the medicine within, then they're going to ask the question, what else can I do?
Yep.
And then it's going to be breath practice while I'm falling asleep, reading labels when I go to the grocery store, considering the possibility of eliminating all my snacks. And by the way, let me say a little something about that. As a doctor, I've done a lot of research on all these diets. And so I have my own predisposition to what feels right to me. And, I'm self-aware, so I can actually track that. Most people aren't. But everybody can become self-aware.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing. When they did research on the paleo and the keto diets, and when they do research on the vegetarian and the vegan diets, the one thing that everybody who goes participates in those research trials has to do is they have to promise to not snack. They have to promise to be on the diet. So it's either a keto diet or it's a vegan diet.
Right.
And so if you compare the statistical analysis of the well-being of the people who are either on a kind of vegetarian vegan or a paleo keto, the improvement that people in the research trials usually experience is pretty much the same. In other words, vegan gives you the same benefit as keto. Okay, so then what? Well, what is the one thing that everybody did? They stopped snacking. So actually, it doesn't matter whether you do keto or vegan. It only matters, are you smart enough to get it, that processed foods are the problem?
Yes. You're absolutely right. And you're right. Yeah. And I've talked about that on this show. Snacking is one of the things that I've said, you know, I'm completely against. And on this show, we don't promote any specific diet like keto or vegan or whatever.
Sure.
Listen, and you're absolutely right. I've said no snacking. Just don't snack. You know, I mean, you can eat in harmony with, you know, because when you, even when you leave space between your meals, and, you know, some people eat two meals a day, some people eat three meals. I mean, I eat three meals a day, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, like I did as a kid, but I don't snack in between. I leave 5 or 6 hours between meals to let my body process, to let my hormones get back into balance and all these types of things. Really, that's kind of just a, I call it kind of a lifestyle of eating. I don't necessarily like the diet term. I just say it's good. And of course, not eating before you go to bed, because that, to me, that's a no-no. But yeah, I completely agree. And it makes so much sense.
Well, it's like a secret.
Yeah.
It's the secret thing is, like, everybody's debating, oh, you know, la, 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 and la, la, la. But right in the middle there is this one thing that we absolutely know from all the research is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. You're spot on that.
So back to the trainings and stuff. You know, right now we're getting ready for a level one of, our teacher training is a 200-hour training. It happens in three levels. We just finished a level two. We're getting ready to do a level one. the Healer Within Foundation, people can look that up. It's healerwithinfoundation.org. Very, pretty much easy. All the words, we know how to spell all those words. And I'll just mention one other thing that we do here at headquarters. So headquarters is called Health Action Synergies. And under Health Action Synergies is the IIQTC mind-body practices, etc. But then there's another division of Health Action Synergies, which is called the Circle of Life. And the Circle of Life is a holistic life planning program. And so, you know, I've got my email address up with myself, I think it might be. And you'll probably give it to people in the notes and so forth.
Yep.
And so if you're interested in something like holistic life planning, well, what does that mean? Well, it's a whole other discussion. Maybe we could get together again sometime and just look at the Circle of Life. It's an amazing program, and we've trained a lot of people that are called coaches or facilitators, who also work in the YMCAs and the hospitals and the school systems and so forth, about this whole idea of making a life plan, a holistic, thoughtful life plan. And so when you get to the beginning of a new year, there's this thing called New Year's resolution. Well, people make a New Year's resolution, they don't tell anybody, and then they don't do it, and then that's that. And with the holistic life plan, what happens is that you make your resolution not as something like, I have to do this because people will like me better. It's, I have to do this because it's in alignment with my essence.
Right.
And there's a process that goes, that a person needs to go through to get from their socialized opinion of what they should do next and a more, shall we say, essence-based or purpose-based resolution that then you actually share with other people, so they know that you're working on it. And then instead of just not doing it and not telling anybody, we have a whole process for working with other people who have shared values. And it's really an amazing process.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. And I'm really excited, you know, for your programs, and I'm excited for folks in my audience to make sure that they check it out. Again, it's the website is iiqtc.org. It's also going to be in the show notes. It's also going to be on the website as well. Dr. Jonka is going to be on the website as well. All the information is going to be there so everybody can check it out. And I thank you not only for being on the program with us, but for just simplifying these amazing concepts and giving a masterclass just on healing energy, qigong, breath, and everything. It has been an absolute honor. And thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, what a pleasure. Many blessings to you and everyone who is listening. And George, thank you so much for your commitment to, what are we doing here? I think we are in the process of inviting people into a self-deterministic world.
That's it, yep.
From, you know, that ruinous education that we've all had, it leveraged some things, of course, but we're, you know, a person over 24 is basically invited to recover their natural self.
Agree.
Completely. Thanks for helping out with that.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. All right. Okay.
Wish you well.
I'll be back. Wow, folks, that was absolutely powerful, and that was a fantastic way to end 2023. So, it's great. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Make sure you check out his website, check out all the information. He's got some great, great information on there. And, if for those of you who want to make a resolution, go for it. And this is a great way to do that and get started on the healing process and the self-determination process, because I think you will not regret it moving forward. So I want to wish everyone a very happy, healthy, and safe holiday season and a great new year. And I will see you guys next year. Don't forget, make sure you take care of yourselves. Make sure you take care of each other. And don't forget, control your health. Have a great day.